everyone. Welcome to Beyond the Matrix with Patricia Corey. That is me. It is a program that dares you to think outside of the box of convention. And in these times of conventional mayhem, we need people like my guest tonight, Tony Rathstone, who will talk to us about how to turn things to the positive direction and manifest our dreams. And before I bring Tony in, I want to tell you all that I know I haven't been around much of late. I've been traveling all over this great planet, and I'm just back from a really extended stay in Egypt, where more magical things have been occurring, and where I finished my new book, Where Pharaohs Dwell, One Mystic's Journey Through the Gates of Immortality. That will be coming out in November, and I promise you it's going to be one incredible journey to share with you. So that's something coming up. And I will be leaving in March for the journey to the Maya lands. We've got one more day. If anyone listening wants to take part in this journey, you've got to get in touch with me at info@syrianrevelations.net as we're winding up reservations. So that's the news on the sacred journeys. And now we'll go on another sacred journey into your soul with Tony Rathstone. Tony, are you with me?
Hi, Patricia. You got me on there?
Yeah, there you are. Thank you for being on my show. You contacted me with the possibility of telling people about your program. Your approach to manifesting beauty.
What it is you're trying to come across, right.
Yeah. So then we'll talk also about your fitness boot camp in Rancho Cucamonga, which I have no idea about. So we've got a whole hour to learn what you're doing and what you're sharing with the world. So where do we start?
Well, the easiest place to start is a few years back in the hurricanes that came down into Florida, where we had four or five different hurricanes hit the southern coast of the United States.
Uh-huh.
I think that was a couple of years ago. Right,
yeah.
Before then, my wife and I decided that, her name is Molly, and I decided to just stop everything that we were doing and try to recreate ourselves in a way that made us inspired to get up every day. So we sold our business, sold our houses, sold our rentals, sold everything we owned, packed everything up in a truck that would fit in a small truck, and drove to Florida.
To help the people there?
To start, open up, what we were going to start at the time was a fitness boot camp based upon the philosophies that have become our program, which is See It as Perfect. So,
okay, so you were going into a devastated environment.
Right before it happened.
Right before it happened.
Right before it happened, we were going.
Oh, that's divine guidance.
So, we fly down there, and we're trying to find a house to buy. So we ended up, long story short, we purchased this house, but it's not quite complete yet, but we've sold everything we owned in California. So we decided just to go out there anyways and see what comes. So we started picturing everything going right. Well, when we arrive, what we were picturing happening was a smooth transition into this house.
Well,
it turns
doesn't sound
out,
like it did if you were bombarded with hurricane after hurricane.
Yes, and the whole process kicked off with when we got there, the owner of the house had left, and he was supposed to leave with a key and didn't. So when we arrived, we had no way to get into the house, and we had to go to a lawyer's office and convince the lawyer, even though we had no verifiable address now, no contact information, no bank accounts that were traditional bank accounts that they could verify with. They had no way to verify who we were and no way to contact the owner. So we had to get the lawyer to give us the key to get into the house anyways.
So how do you explain this as seeing it's perfect?
So we said, well, if we continue to hold the outcome that we're after, and the outcome was always generated down to a feeling. So you don't want $100,000, for example. You want what the $100,000 will buy, and you don't want the $100,000 will buy. You want what the feeling you're going to get when you buy whatever it is you've got. So our outcome was to be in the house that night. So we pictured ourselves in the house that night and created the feeling of being in the house, feeling the carpet on our feet, taking a shower, moving our feet across the grass. And our two dogs that came along the trip with us had to be in the house as well. So we go through this image and we get these feelings generated inside ourselves, and we just kind of look at each other and we say, okay, are you on board? And I'm like, I'm on board, babe. She says, okay, I'm going to go buy a bed because our truck hadn't arrived yet with our furniture and we needed a place to sleep. So she goes to a retail establishment and buys a bed and tells them to deliver it to the house. So she goes back to the house, has no way to get into the house, goes to the backyard, and convinces the people to deliver the bed to the backyard in a thunderstorm.
Fabulous.
You have to act as if it's going to take place. And the ultimate outcome that we wanted was to be in the house that night. And it was the feeling of being in the house that we were trying to generate. So I go to the lawyer's office, and I walk in and inform them that I, at some point today, before 5 o'clock, I will have the key to this place. So how do you want to go about this? And they just looked at me and laughed, and I sat down and continued to picture them giving me the key and what it would feel like for me to have the key, what it would feel like for them to give me the key, and what it would feel like to be in the house. So end of the story is they hand me the key, we go to the house, and in the house we are. And so See It Is Perfect began.
Fantastic. Okay, so let's talk about what you really describe as your method, because I personally work so much with people, helping them understand how to visualize, and we're right on the same page on this, but so many people are still in that, in that futuristic sense of if it only could happen, rather than you are the creator of it in every moment of your life. So how do you work with people to really help them break through to understand in your method, is to see it as perfect, in your work with people, how do you help them manifest?
Translate that into their lifestyle.
Exactly. And thank you for translating it into my language, because I was struggling.
What happens when people start to visualize, the first misconception that's taking place is that the visualization is outside of themselves, that there's something else that's doing it, that the visualization is someplace other than themselves. So the concept that people first have to find a way to come to terms with in their own life is a good, accurate definition of the word one, which I'm sure you've come across a lot. People say, well, if we're all one, what does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
Well, one, if you break it down from a quantum physics point, you can take a table, and you take that table and you break it down, and it's made up of molecules, and the molecules are made up of atoms, and the atoms are made up of nuclei and electrons, and the nucleons move over to quarks, and then we go to the electric weak unification field, to the ground unification field, to the super unification field, which all ultimately comes all the way down to your own inner consciousness. So I broke down a table to the same thing that everyone's connected to.
Mm-hmm.
So I can break down a chair, a hat, a tree, everything. If you break it down to its smallest points, is made up of the same things. So I'm not really talking to a table on a quantum level. I'm talking to myself, or a version of myself, an aspect of myself. So when you look at the idea of one, you become entranced with the idea that I am connected to this thing. It's not separate from me. And if I get that it's not separate from me, then the visualization takes on a whole new meaning. I'm not creating something outside of myself. I'm actually magnifying something that's already inside myself. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. And how would you relay this to the hysteria that people are driving themselves into in this mood of lack and panic over the global economic situation?
In this particular case, what's happened is you've magnified on the outcome that is most prevalent to what you are feeding yourself with. So if I look around and all I'm able to see is lack, I'm not seeing the abundance that's around me at the same time. That's a choice.
But this is seeming to be a choice that a huge number of people are making, and I'm just wondering how you perceive civilization swinging back to the positive outcome.
I believe it's actually a simple process. When you start to figure out inside yourself, if I'm connected to all of this stuff, then I'm not worried about what's happening outside of me. I have to clear up what's inside of me instead of outside of me. So if I just lost my job, my focus isn't in on the loss of the job. My focus is the loss of an aspect of myself that I have to reconnect with. So what is that aspect that I'm not reconnecting with, and how can I feel good about that right now? And then you realize that it's kind of like having a cup of coffee in your hand, and you're not trying to release the coffee. What you're trying to do is put your focus on more of the clear water coming in, and eventually you keep pouring clear water into that cup of coffee, and the water will look like clear water again, the way it originally started.
Mm-hmm.
So if I can step outside of what's happening into the world, back into my own heart, and look around myself and say, okay, what in my house right now do I feel good about? What in my life do I feel good about? And focus on those things. Every neurological process in your body will start to fire off. The chemicals will start to fire off. And you will feel good, which will radiate into the 93% of communication that's happening in the outside world when someone looks at you. So I now will resonate at a frequency that's different than the one before. I can't resonate at destruction, despair, hopelessness, and be happy. So if I've changed what I'm resonating with to something of happiness, then the things that are around me have to be on that same level. And hence
and,
you're
and
attracted.
Do you feel that do you see a pendulum effect of this mass consciousness of lack swinging anytime soon? Because it's getting rather boring.
I wouldn't call it boring. I'd actually call it very interesting. Because, again, it's a way of perceiving what's going on around you and choosing that perception and calling it bad. At what point do we look at a temperature thermometer that's at 50 degrees and it's rising up and it's now at 90 degrees? When do you call it warm and when do you call it hot? What was the point that changed that?
Yeah, that's
and this is what's happening in the economy now.
Comment. Indeed. I just had a conversation with someone today who was talking about how bad things are and what danger lurks and the terror that's going to happen. And I said, did you realize that breaking all of the superfluous down around us is part of our leap in consciousness?
Yes.
And can you visualize that this is a good thing? And he said, well, it's easy for you to say you're not out of work. And I said, you're not out of work either, my love. You know, you're already projecting yourself into being in lack and poverty, and you're a working person. But this
yes.
is just a reflection of how paranoid and really taken people are by the experience of what's going on at a global level in certain pockets.
And
certainly
yes,
not the whole planet is in lack, that's for sure.
No, not at all. And just as in the Great Depression in the United States back in the 20s, it also produced some of the most wealthiest people in the world's ever seen at the time, too. So there's
That is something for people to really focus on, that in the worst-case scenario, where we really do go back to a difficult time like the Great Depression, we got past the Great Depression, and America went on to be one of the most important, if not the most important economy in the world. So we really need to be able to focus on the positive outcome of difficult situations and transform them from difficult into productive.
Yes. So with your friend, now my question is always come back to when someone says I'm out of work. I don't really understand that concept, and I understand the concept at the same time. Yes, I have a job, and I go to work, and I get a paycheck. But, see, I have a job, too, but I don't get a paycheck like everybody else. I'm commissioned. I've been commissioned the majority of my life. So I'm out of work every day. I'm always out of work.
Me, too. And hallelujah to that.
Yes, exactly. I wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's so important for people to also recognize this huge potential that we have to create untold things that can create revenue flows. But we've got to get out of that mindset of needing the job.
Yes, the need to need.
Yes.
The need to need.
Is that what you mean by see it as perfect?
Yes. Yes.
Well, this is easy.
It is easy. It is easy, and it's a perspective that people have decided to have. They have decided to say that the world is in a bad place. Well, the world's always going to be in a bad place. It has to. There's a polarity to the existence. There's a high and a low in everything you see. There's a good and a bad in everything you see. And somewhere in that scale of hot and cold, you reside all the time. And it's your choice as to where you wish to reside. And
there's also the fact that we as a civilization inevitably build ourselves to the high peaks of our potential, and then we tear them down. We tear it down when we reach them because we like to work on new projects.
Yes, we do. Now, the weird thing about that, the way that you put that, Patricia, you could say, if we're on a scale of 1 to 10, and we're at 1, and 10 is the highest point, 1 is the lowest point. Well, if I move up from the scale from 1 to 2, for example, well, 2 is better than 1. So I've made progress. Now, I didn't make tremendous progress because I'm at 10. I'm not at 10. I'm only at 2. But I've doubled where I was. So I was making $10 an hour. Now I'm making 20. But I have the potential of making 100 at the frequency that I'm vibrating at right now.
Mm-hmm.
You with me?
Oh, yeah.
So if I'm moving up this scale, the scale isn't a static thing. It's not 1 to 10 because I will still always have that gauge of 1 to 10. So now I'm at 2. Well, now the scale is going to be between 2 and 12. I'm mm-hmm. still at the bottom of the scale, but I can go flying right up there past what...
Not only that, but you go flying in your spirit and emotion when you celebrate the 2 and use the 10 as a direction but not as a focus of where you will achieve satisfaction or happiness.
Right. The only way you can achieve satisfaction or happiness is to be okay with yourself. Because you are all you have, and you are everything at the same time. It's kind of weird.
So how do you tell this to a father of a family of 4 who has just lost his job? How do we help these people?
Okay. So this individual that's just lost his job, what does he actually love to do? Or what are his skills that he loves to impart into other people's lives? If he's a mechanic, if he's a carpenter, if he's a gardener, what on the neighborhood that he lives on do people need? What service do they need? Do they require to make their lives better? So if he goes, wait a second here, I'm going to go do the one thing that will change everything in the way humanity runs right now, and that's service to others. I'm going to walk down my neighbor, I'm going to knock on his door, and I'm going to say, what is it that I can do to help you get where you want to go? Because right now I'm a little confused on where I want to go, but I do know that I want to service society. I want to make a difference. I want to feel like I can contribute. So right now, what is it that you need done that I can do for you and see if we can generate an income for either both of us or myself for doing it? What is it that you need done? And then go to the next door and go to the next door and go to the next door. And all he's doing is talking to himself. But people don't see it as talking to himself. They see this individual as someone outside of themselves. And as long as they see themselves as outside of themselves, then they believe that something outside of themselves can control them. And that's not true.
I agree with you. You are on my page, mister.
If we stop for a second and picture a feeling inside of ourselves, which is a weird way of saying it, but I'm a very visual person, so I'm always going to say see, picture, feel before I get to feel. But you want to feel the energy inside yourself and amplify that and walk to the next place and the next house and the next house or the next business. Every business in America, in the world, that still is open today needs their services marketed. How could you market mm-hmm. that? Well, who do you know that needs that person's service? If I know a hairstylist and she's low on business and she charges $100 to do your hair, if I walked over to the hairstylist and said, hi, Maddie, you know what? I know some people that need their hair done. You charge $100. If I go get them and have them come to you, they have the money to pay for their hair, they'll pay you the $100, but I want $20. When I bring them to you. Now, it didn't cost you anything to have the person, and I brought them to you, but you give me the 20 for them every time they come. Yeah. As a business owner, I would love 50,000 people doing that for me. I would pay them for
it. Well, you're doing a lot of heads of hair, I'll tell you that.
Right. But now, what happened to the economy? What happened to that person's lifestyle that's getting paid for, getting paid for doing nothing is the way it appears. You don't have a job, but you've just contributed to your whole community. You've just contributed to the hairstylist. You just got the person that needed the hair done to someone that really, really wanted to do their hair and was going to spend more time on them and service them, make them feel good, that they can transfer that to the next person that they go to. And now you can go to the cleaners and the gardeners and the check cashing place and every other business and do the same thing. It's not that people don't want more business. It's that people don't want to help other people get more business. It's always, what's in it for me? What's in it for me? When the thing that drives the economy is service for others, not service for self. So right now, we're focused on a service for self mindset, and that's what we're picturing as a society as a whole. We're picturing what's in it for me. Well, if it's what's in it for me, I'm going to save everything I can. I can hoard everything I can. Well, that's going to stop the basic laws of nature. Because
yeah,
nature
well,
is
it's really true. It's really true. And you know, it looks like maybe all of this extreme shift is to teach us to get out of that what's in it for me mentality and start really not just giving lip service to the concept, but really being in service to the other.
Yes.
And it looks like it really takes mass the mass society a really extreme vibration for them to get this.
If you look at it from a global perspective, if you shrink it down, the power of the one person, which is connected to everything, one person can change the mindset of everybody on their street, which can change everybody that they know and they know and they know. If you look at simple referral marketing, one person knows 250 other people. So if I get myself to get my mindset right, to get my heart right, to get my idea of what I'm grateful for in my life and start projecting that and telling the people in my life that I am very thankful that they're in my life and how can I help you get what you want, that will transcend in a matter of days to everybody on the planet. Because as the 6 degrees of separation work, I'm only 6 people away from actually knowing you personally in Rome right now.
What is the 6 degrees of separation for the listening audience?
The 6 degrees of separation means that every person on the planet is connected by 6 people. So if I give a letter to a stranger on the street right here and say, I'm trying to get this to Patricia, she's in Rome. Do you happen to know anybody in Rome or know somebody that might know somebody in Rome? Get this to them. And then they just did the study on a documentary the other day. So we were watching it on the Travel Channel.
6 people later, you get this into my hands?
Yes, it will be in your hands.
Way cool. I am seeing it as perfect. I'm ready for it to arrive.
So if we're 6 people away from connecting anybody on the planet, then
I'm trying to change myself
and the people around me. Go ahead, sorry.
Sorry, I was just going to say that 6 away, but at a time when we are seeing things manifest so rapidly, I'm sure we're going to get to 1 away very soon.
Yes, the modern technology is making it extremely fast now.
No, not only the technology, but just the vibration of the planet. I mean, I'm sure that, well, of course, your focus is about showing and teaching people how to manifest, but I'm sure in your own experience you're noticing how rapidly things manifest.
Yes. Yes.
Whereas in the past, no matter how you, let's say seeing it perfect or not, there was a different time reference for things to materialize. Boy, now it's just like zap, 24 minutes later, not even hours. Are you noticing this?
Yes. I was listening to you, and at the same time I was trying to pull out my little 68-second, I keep a journal at night. I call it the 68-second manifestation journal, the 68-second journal. So today is the 19th, correct?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, today's the 19th. So on the evening of the 16th, I wrote, I would like to be on a radio show that is brought it. Hold on, I'm finding it right here. Radio show. The opportunity to meet a radio show, read and discuss manifestation with a radio host in another country.
That's precision. And as you remember, when you contacted me, I had just had a cancellation for today's show.
You had a cancellation, and that's how we ended up on the show.
Because usually I'm booked up for months.
Yes. And I had no idea that you were actually in Italy. Because when I originally heard about you, the information I had was you were still in, the information put you in San Francisco, California.
Oh, that's where I'm from. Great days of San Francisco. But some madness brought me to the Italy, and here I've been for 25 years.
See, pretty cool. I grew up in San Jose, so I
know. Oh, my God, I grew up in San Jose, too!
Whereabouts? Just curious. Now I'm off subject.
I grew up on in the on Mount Hamilton Road, up in the hills.
Ah, that's funny. I grew up in the Almaden Valley, right off Almaden Expressway. Went to Leland High School.
Oh, my God. Where
so
did you
went
go
to Santa Teresa. I went to Leland.
I went to James Lick High School.
James Lick High, yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's synchronistic.
So, here we are back.
Okay, so
again.
Now we
we're
know we
connected.
Come from the same location. Must be something good in the water in San Jose.
Or the frequency that you're generating is attracting to you people that have the similar things.
Indeed.
We resonate at the same point on many
yeah,
different
we definitely levels. Resonate, Tony, because all of the images that you used, like the table, for example, I mean, how many times have I discuss this with people of when we talk about life and inanimate objects versus animate, and I tell them just take a sliver of a piece of wood from a table and put it under a microscope and you will recognize that everything is alive.
Yes.
So that's
constantly
cool.
Moving.
Now, tell us a little bit about this fabulous story. You mean like the time we melted an engine? And tell us what that's about.
So my wife and I are down in the Caribbean, one of the things, trips we wanted to manifest. So we're down there, and we're on our way back. We get at a St. Martin. We catch the plane, and on the plane they tell us that there's a thunder and lightning storm, once again, thunder and lightning storm in Florida. And we will be diverted. Well, we already knew that in order to get back into L.A., we had to catch one particular plane. And it was within minutes of us theoretically landing and getting through customs and getting over there. And we knew it would be close when we made it, but we just pictured ourselves being home that night. So we get to the point, we're on the plane, we get told that there's a thunder and lightning storm, we're getting diverted, and we kind of look at each other and laughed and went through our same process again, going back to picturing us inside LAX. My dad was going to be the one picking us up. Talking with my dad, getting the luggage, feeling the whole arena of LAX, if you've ever been there. It's got a certain smell to it. It's got a certain mm-hmm. feeling to it. So we get this feeling inside ourselves, and we start seeing everybody on the plane get extremely agitated that they're going to miss their connecting flights, too, because they're coming across the loudspeaker telling us on the plane that all planes out of Fort Lauderdale aren't going anywhere. All planes now are canceled. We're going to be in Fort Myers. We're going to have to stop. Land, get fuel, you won't be allowed off the plane because we got to go through customs. You're going to go back up into the air, get back into the pattern, and instead of being one of the first ones to land, you'll be whoever, wherever you are in the schedule of circle to come down and land because we had to leave the area to go get gas and other people didn't. So mm-hmm. they've now convinced everybody on the plane there's no way on the planet you're going to catch your connecting flight. So they're rather upset, and Molly and I are feeling actually really good because we are feeling the sensation of being home, regardless of what the outside experience was, because the outside experience had nothing to do with our inside experience, which was what we could control. So we controlled that and went on about reading and writing and playing on the computer and so forth. So we finally arrive in Fort Lauderdale, and every other plane is arriving in Fort Lauderdale. Now, customs is jam-packed. There's no way we're going to get through customs, and Molly and I know that if you continue to feel your outcome and see your outcome as perfect, you have to go through the actions as if that is also going to take place. So in spite of the fact that it was now 8 o'clock and the plane's supposed to leave at 8:30 and supposedly not leaving anywhere, and every sign around us is saying that the plane's not going to leave, we're trying to get through customs. We get through customs. We go up, and they tell us we have to go all the way back to the front of the airport to come through the main entrance of the airport, And in St. Martin, they didn't give us the right information to catch the connecting flight. So I had to go cut in front of all these people that are very upset and walk up to the person and tell them that I need a boarding ticket to get on a plane that supposedly doesn't exist now. Still with me?
I'm there.
So he tells me, there's no reason to give you this information. And I said, you know what, my wife and I are actually seeing it as perfect, so if you can go ahead and go through the motions of doing your job, I would appreciate it. You'd be happier doing your job than yelling at me, because all you have to do is give me this little ticket, and I'll go away, and you can go on about your day and have a great day or a great night. So he just throws the ticket at me. I take off running. Molly's trying to get through now the security gates and all that, and she's made arrangements to get us all the way up to the front of the security gate with our stuff, and we walk through to a plane that the people are telling us now has been canceled, and the only plane now that will leave the area is one to Lima, Peru, and that's the last plane out for the night. So I don't know why you're wasting your time, and Molly just kind of laughed and said, well, it's our time to waste. We'll move on, and off we go. We get all the way to the place where it just happened to be Lima, Peru was the actual gate that the LAX plane was supposed to be on. So we get to the Lima, Peru. Molly walks up to the gate lady and she says, hi. And the gal says, well, Lima, Peru has just been canceled. There's no more planes going. Well, we do have one more plane that's going to be leaving tonight. And Molly's all, really? What plane is that? She says, well, we had a problem with the plane before, and that plane is now ready to go, and we're going to let that one go. It's going to LAX, even though it's about 45 minutes late now. She said, really? And the gal announces over the loudspeaker, anybody that has a torn ticket, meaning you were on board and you were deboarded from that plane at one time, you're allowed to get back on the plane. And the gal looks at Molly and says, your ticket wasn't torn. And she says, I know. And she tears the ticket, and down the aisle we go, as if we're going to get on the plane anyways. Nobody stopped us. We get on the plane, we sit there, and the stewardess comes by, and she says, I don't remember you guys on the plane before. And she's like, that's right, you don't. And that's what Molly is saying to the gal. And she just kind of laughs and went, whatever. And she says, so what was the end result? What happened to the other plane? Or what happened to the plane? And the gal said, well, we've never had this occur before, but the passenger in the back was smelling this melting metal, and it turns out one of the engines was melting. And Molly's all, really? So we went through the whole process of believing that the plane, that we would arrive in LAX, feeling good about the whole scenario. In spite of all of the outside circumstances, we relied on what we knew to be true, is that we can control our feelings. And somehow, some way, our willingness to follow through with that action coincidentally coincided with an engine melting and allowing
but
us to get on
the plane. But you're not blaming yourselves for taking credit for or blaming yourselves for actually melting the engine.
No, we just find it a weird coincidence. The engine melted. And because the engine melted, we got to get on the plane that shouldn't have been there, that shouldn't have been leaving, that we shouldn't have gotten to, and we wouldn't have gotten to if we would listen to everybody along the way that told us, no, go home, go get a hotel room. We're the only ones that was on our plane that was going on to that LAX flight, because there were others that actually got on the plane and went home that night.
Mm-hmm. You're the only ones that didn't have the original torn ticket and got on anyway.
Yes.
There
were still people that had the torn ticket that went home because they said the plane wouldn't be leaving. They weren't continuing to picture what they wanted and holding that outcome regardless of what the outside circumstances. And that goes back to what we were talking about with the economy right now. Everyone's so focused on the outside circumstances instead of what you can control, which is your own feeling, your own energy level, your own vibration, your own frequency.
Yeah, and that and the fact that, you know, I don't know how many people are out of work now in the States, but let's say 3 million?
Probably.
It's 257 million people in the country.
Right. So what's the deal with the rest of those people?
Sorry?
So of the people that aren't employed, that's the majority.
By and large, the majority. So we need to focus on how everything is still working and that there is a momentary disharmony that needs to be adjusted and repaired, not that the whole place is coming down, which is a mantra that a lot of people are starting to believe.
To believe.
And run in their mind.
Yes, which from the way I understand how the brain works, information comes into these two little things that look kind of like cashews called the amygdala. And information that's coming into the amygdala's job is basically to decide what's in it, what is it, what do you want me to do about it based on the survival mechanism first. So back in the days of the caveman, for example, the people that had the fastest amygdalas, those are the ones that could determine the threat in front of them faster than the person that couldn't, so they're still alive. So we could be considered the ancestors of the people that have the fastest amygdalas because we're still alive today. Well, if a survival mechanism is based on how, or if the amygdala is based on the survival mechanism, like the way I understand it to be from what I've read, then we are kind of geared to look at everything from a negative reaction first to decide whether we could survive it or not. Well, if you look out at the world as a negative reaction first, a slick marketer is going to understand that and put the negative up there for you, and that's what you're going to be drawn to look at all the time. But what we don't understand is that we have the control over the of our personal history of how we interpret what we're seeing. We can see it as good or bad. And that's what happened in the 1930s during the Depression. One person looked at it as losing their job. The other person looked at it as a huge opportunity and made a killing, and the other one committed suicide. Both had this, just different perspectives was the only difference between the two. It wasn't the opportunities that presented them. The opportunities were presented to everybody. They decided to focus on the disaster instead of focusing
the lack
on
and the disaster.
Gratitude and move forward. Right. You know, some
so
of the greatest...
What,
go ahead.
You go ahead.
Some of the greatest football players, for example, whether it be American football or the rest of the world football... If the person that's the greatest player, if you ever watch that person play what I would call soccer or football in my ear with a normal, well, you know what I mean, between the two. If one person, the greatest person in the world, if you watch them, they're never looking at the defender or what's trying to prevent them from getting where they want to go. What they're looking at is the hole. What they see is open space, and they move to the open space. They don't see the defenders at all. Or the obstacles at all. All they're constantly focused on is the outcome as to which hole is the fastest one I can get to get me to my end result, which is to put this ball in that goal. They're not looking at any of the problems that are around them. They're only seeing solutions. That's what's happening now. Everyone's looking at the problems, and they're forgetting to see that if I look at the problems, that's what I'm going to run into. If I start looking at the holes through the problems, then I can get where I want to go. And through that door is the door of service, the door of gratitude. But we don't want to do that because, well, what if we're wrong? What if the person doesn't like me? That kind of thing.
So how do you how do you apply? Obviously, you're dealing with the essential teachings of the law of attraction.
In a roundabout way, yes. Although the law of attraction, like, doesn't really attract like. They actually repel. What we do is we resonate with something that's around us. So a tuning fork, you hit a tuning fork and you hold up another one, it will resonate, it will start to resonate at the same vibration. So if I walk into a room and I'm resonating a certain frequency, then I will be drawn to everything, or I will notice everything that is resonating at the same basic frequency that I'm resonating at. And that's what's the another way of looking at what's called the law of attraction, or the way that I understand it. Which may be different.
So what's very important for people is to not start resonating to the lower frequency and find themselves entrained to a vibration that really is not even their own to a certain extent.
Yes, and that's your outcome. What is you're creating your outcome. You're not wanting your outcome. You're not desiring your outcome. You're creating the outcome. So I've just lost my job. I'm going to sit down here for a second, understand the basic laws of nature, that I create my perception of reality. So I'm going to create a reality in which I enjoy, which I like to do, which I have fun doing, which makes me and everyone around me happy and beneficial to everyone around me at the same time, instead of talking about I lost my job. Let me tell you the story about how I lost my job and how I got screwed over and how somebody else got my money. And
how everybody else is losing their jobs.
Right.
Because
and now we can all go have coffee about it.
This is what, I mean, from a few people that I know who are into this mentality, it's another 10,000 people lost their jobs, you know, are going to be losing their jobs. And it's just almost like feeding on blood or something, you know?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like when you get that taste of blood in by, excuse me, I mean by when I say feeding on blood, it's just like this this animalistic almost pleasure in the darker side. You
yeah.
with me?
Yeah, yeah.
It's very magnetic.
Maybe a little different twist on that. Comes from the movie Poltergeist. You remember that
mm-hmm.
movie? Famous
mm-hmm.
movie? Okay, so in Poltergeist, they have that little tiny gal that is trying to convince Joe Beth Williams, and I think it's Craig Nelson, that the daughter is being misconstrued as the light. So all of the entities are being told to come to her instead of to the light of the one.
Mm-hmm.
It's misconstrued. So what's happening now is we're looking around and we see this big ball of energy, and we're not evaluating what that energy is. We're just going, well, that's energy, and I need energy, and I'm going that way now. And we've been deceived. That energy isn't energy on a frequency level that's going to pull you anywhere. It's going to draw you down.
Mm-hmm.
And we get there, and we become this mass group consciousness of a mob instead of an individual that's looking around and creating a group of like-minded beings moving in a direction of the outcome that is best for humanity at the same time. So if you look out at the frequencies, a large frequency of negativity is a bunch of energy, and a large frequency of positive is a bunch of energy. And if I have blinders on right now and all I can see is things that I don't want in my life, I'm going to look up and I'm going to see what I don't want in my life, and I'm going to start to be drawn over to that way because that's all I'm focusing on, like a car coming at you at night and you stare at the lights. You're drawn into that light, and what's happening is you're driving right head on into another car that's about to kill you.
That's so true.
Kind of the way that I picture it. Hopefully it made sense.
Yes, it did. Another thing I'd like to talk about is how people, this is something I find a lot now with people that I'm teaching and working with. Many people are perennially focused in the future or in the past. And in other words, the future of probabilities of what they hope will happen, a past of fantasies and clinging to an idea of a past life or past relationships or whatever, and how to help people really understand the power of being in the moment, which is all you've got.
That's a great question.
Because we need direction, and in order to manifest something, we need a direction to. I use the term of casting your fishing line to give you a direction of where you want to be headed, but not that you are so stuck in the outcome of that future that you are not living, enjoying the now. You follow me?
Yes, yes. I was trying to break it down into a smaller thing for myself, in that how would you define now? For you, how do you define the word now? What is
well,
that?
Yeah, of course we can split hairs and say that now is already over because I pronounced it and it's past.
Okay, so
we'll
we won't play the semantics.
Yeah, we don't. We don't want to do that or we'll get crazy and we only
right?
have a few minutes left to talk. But by the now, I basically mean enjoying what you are creating in every moment of your life rather than being so fixated on what you want to occur in the future that you aren't seeing the creation and loving what you are doing right now, today, this moment.
So what would you consider to be the doorway, so to speak, to that presence?
I think it's important for people to cast their fishing line in a direction that will help them approach a direction or go in a direction where they see, to have a direction, but to enjoy the getting there.
Yes.
That's what I think is really important. Obviously, you're not going to go take a ship out in the middle of the ocean and wonder why you can't figure out where you're going. You're going to bring a map. You're going to bring tools and instruments that are going to help you set your sights on a direction where you're headed. But if your only focus in life is arriving, guess what? When you get there, it's like, great, I'm here. Now what else can I look forward to? So I think that we have to draw a balance between the art of focusing on what you want to get it and the art of appreciating what you've got right now on your way to manifesting what you want, your direction.
Yeah. Right.
But I think do not understand how to love what they're doing and receiving right now, they're not very capable of manifesting anything in a future direction anyway.
So do you think then that people would have an inaccurate understanding of what appreciation for something is, what an experience of gratitude for something is?
Well, I think that's a general statement. I think people who are projecting themselves always into the future may not have an appreciation for what they have.
What they
have
at the moment.
For example, I'll give you an example. In my work, I'm helping people activate the energy body. I'm doing DNA activation work and things of this nature.
I read that about it on your website.
Thank you for checking. All right, so we have people that come into these workshops, and it's like, well, you talk about 3 strands, but what about 6? What about 9? I mean, why can't we go for the whole 12, 144, 2020? And I'm constantly trying to help people understand that there is no outcome in this nebulous future that is the right way, the only thing to strive for. Enjoy the passaging, the passing, while you are on your path to attaining a goal. Am I becoming rhetorical here?
No, you're hammering home a point that people need to get, and the more way that point gets explained, the more possibility that they're going to resonate with that answer.
So we're on the same page with this?
yes. So how is it that I can take my feelings, my thought process, and no longer feel incomplete? Because I believe that if I'm always looking into the future, I'm looking to the future because it's not now, and I'm hoping to complete something about myself by obtaining this $100,000, this car.
That's
this thing.
What my so point
is. I'm perceiving myself as incomplete. How do I perceive myself as full, as complete? As back to that definition that we were discussing at the beginning, what's your definition of one? What does that mean? So maybe if here's an image that just pops in my head. I'm going to go take a shower. I'm going to get in that shower. Now, in order for the water to come through, it's going to have a power source, a switch that turns it on and off. I'm going to hit the handle, and the water is going to come out. And the water, let's call that the source. So the water to come out, that's the source. The handle turns the source on and off. And we believe, based on the environment and the cultures that we've been brought up in, that there is a switch that turns that power on and off. And what we're not understanding is that if we take your sliver of wood and we break it down to its smallest point, and we take ourselves and break ourselves down to the smallest point, we are the same thing. So there isn't a switch that turns us on or off from source. We are source at the same time. We are the piece of the puzzle that's missing that you put in, and the puzzle is complete, and you take out, and it's a complete in itself in your hand, but then it's also complete when it's in the whole puzzle. Where the drop of water that you have in your hand, and you look at the glass, and you put the drop in the glass, and the drop still exists inside the glass, you just don't know where it is. You lose your sight of separateness because you're part of the whole. So we're seeing ourselves as separate from the whole. That's what I think is the crust of incomplete. How do we stop, or how do we get back to understanding that we're the source? We are the water all the time. We've always been the water coming out of the shower. There is no switch that turns it on and off.
Well, this is the great work of our passage through the physical reality of the illusion of separation, because it does seem to be inherent in our reality, the fact that we need darkness and light to perceive form, if you think about this.
Yes.
Without degrees of light and darkness, we can't actually make out any forms. So it's inherent in our dimension to be in this duality.
Yes. The polarity of everything that exists, a high and a low and everything, and we just happen to be riding at some level in on the scale of 1 to 10, we're somewhere on that scale, but the scale is going to go to both sides. But the 1 to 10 only seems separate to us from the vantage point that we have right now. There was a movie that just came out with Vantage Point, where they followed each particular character in the movie and showed their vantage point of the scene that was unfolding, and it was always different, but it was always the same scene. We just happen to have a vantage point right now where we're seeing ourselves as separate instead of seeing ourselves as whole. So if someone's always constantly looking at the future for completeness, then maybe an exercise would be to step back and go, how am I part of everything in my reality right now? How am I connected to everything here right now? How is it my fault that I see lack in the world? How is it that it's my fault?
Oh, yes. This is really the quintessential aspect of becoming a sovereign being. When you really understand that you came in to this reality or this dimension or this lifetime consciously choosing all the characters, choosing the time of arrival, just as you probably chose what time you're going to be exiting, choosing the environment and the scene and the reality of that exit, that means you take responsibility for everything that happens. When people can really get that, where you take responsibility for everything that happens and you take credit for everything that happens too, isn't this one of the most liberating, empowering ways to approach life in general and whatever is occurring in your environment right now?
Yes. So if we translate that into the art of war, for example, what's happening in the Middle East right now, if you can communicate that thought process of how your little sliver of wood breaks down into its smallest portion, and I break down into the smallest portion, and those two smallest portions are the same thing, then the next time that soldier looks down the gun and looks out the crosshairs and sees another human being or another creature on the other side and says, wait a second here, I break down to the zero-point field or the inner consciousness, and that thing breaks down to the inner consciousness. I'm actually firing upon myself. Why would I do that? I have no desire.
So someone who's listening might say, this is all very utopic, but how do you envision revolutionizing 6.7 billion people into understanding the oneness?
Well, for us, we've decided that what works for us at this point in our lives is the simple concept, seed is perfect. You're either going to see the outcome the way the outcome is best to be experienced for all, or you're going to surrender to the outcome that's worst. You're going to see it go right or you'll see it go wrong. And every moment of now you experience, you will see it as right or you will see it as wrong. But either way you see it, it is your choice to see it that way.
Perfect. All right, let's give some people some information about you so that they can get in touch with you and learn more about you. And Molly, by the way, I hope she's listening in. And my love to you, Molly. Next time we'll have you on the interview as well. The website for Tony and Molly is www.seeitasperfect.com. And before we finish our just incredibly fast hour together, what do you want to share with the people who are listening in as an inspirational thought based on what we've been talking about and the great work that you're doing to help them be more empowered and more, let's say, responsible for what they are creating as their ultimate realities?
Well, a kind of weird idea to look at it, if people look back at their past, they can go back and say, when I was 17, when I was 42, and they could see the scene that was there. If I could talk to that person that was 42 and tell them the day they lost their job that their life got better, because here I am today at 52, I know my life is better than I was when I was 42. I just didn't know it when I was 42. If I get in the habit of talking to myself when I was 42, when I was 15, when I was 23, I'm communicating with that aspect of myself, of who I was at that time, then a weird thing will start to occur. Because that's, say, on your left side. On your right side, when you're 62, you now have that habit. So the 62-year-old person is now standing right next to you. That's you in the future, talking to you right now, telling you that this economy thing will pass. You will be more than fine. You will actually be better than fine on the other side, if you're willing to listen to your future self, who's in the room with you right now trying to talk to you, just like you're trying to talk to your past. Are you willing to listen to yourself? Are you willing to see it as perfect?
I love that way of ending that you're, the hour we have to you, reminding people that you have an opportunity here. You can sink into the victim consciousness of all that's surrounding you and the fear, or you can, as we've been saying, identify in this shifting reality, a new paradigm, breaking down old to bring in new, a kind of feng shui of things that need to go to free us up for bringing and anchoring so much more light on this planet. It is your responsibility to do that for yourself, for the people you love. You can only show them by being what you want the world to be. I'm afraid that's not an original quote, but I think it's the most important thing to remember. And with that, Tony, I've got to say good night. Well, it's good night where I am in Rome. It's good day.
Good day to us.
Thank you so much, Tony, and you, Molly, in the background for the good work you're doing, the wonderful frequencies you're sending out, and for coming to share this with my audience. Again, Tony and Molly are www.seeitasperfect.com. Thanks, Tony. I hope you'll come back later on, and we'll talk more about everything else you're doing with Molly, too.
Great. You have a good night, Patricia. Thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you, too. All the love to you. Okay, everybody, I'm going to sign out now. Thank you for listening in to Beyond the Matrix. Stay in the free thought zone where everything is possible. Fly above the disharmony of the Matrix. I'll see you next week. Bye-bye.